I will get to your messages after my chat with Knan Lidor, but Renes, yours could be relevant to the Israel report. So just very quickly, you wrote, no wonder Trump stopped the war. He had to go out and hand a football trophy. Clearly dripping with cynicism this afternoon. Carol, I'll get to your message too. But right now, absolute pleasure. And it's been a while. I'm going to be chatting to Knan Lidor. We're going to be talking about what's happening in Israel this afternoon. Knan, it's been a long time. Great to have you back.
Hi, good afternoon, good evening over here in Israel.
I guess where I want to start today, we've had a lot of chat this afternoon about the Haredi protests. One listener, in fact, was saying her grandchild had a doctor's appointment, had been planned for years, actually, for a particular specialist, and couldn't get there today. I just thought it was interesting. It has that kind of an effect, which I hadn't thought about.
Yes, and you're touching on something that we are feeling here on the ground. Patience in the Israeli society, especially now that the war is over, is running thin. Right now, I'm talking to you from Yad Chana. It's near Kfar Yona. Kfar Yona is a suburb of Netanya, and over there, there are a few dozen draft dodgers, Haredi draft dodgers that were arrested and placed under arrest. This is a new development. Just over the past few weeks, enforcement has begun. And for the second week straight, Haredi protesters, young yeshiva guys, are staging road blockages at that military camp where those draft dodgers are held. And for the first time, we saw this week that residents of Kfar Yona, who depend on this traffic artery to get home and out, they stage a counter-protest. And we haven't seen this before, and we're entering very dangerous territory, because when you have rival factions arranging demonstrations, that's the fodder that causes, you know, conflagrations, which we, you know, really don't need after these three long, hard years of fighting.
And who are we talking about? Are we talking about the extremists within the Haredi world, or are we talking about the more mainstream Gur Goldknopf sect? Who are there today?
These are not extremists. This is not out of the control of them, of the influential rabbis of the Lithuanian, mainly the Lithuanian Haredi community. But that said, we're not full throttle. Okay, so they're ordering a few yeshivas, major yeshivas, to bring a few thousand bohurim for protests. But again, and I say this each time, the potential for disruption that the Haredi community in Israel has is immense. They are able to carry out a demonstration of over a million people. We haven't seen this yet. This is still a measured escalation.
All right, let's move to Iran-Israel issues. The Green Prince blasts Trump's role in the Iran war. I can't say I'm surprised by that. I'm guessing you aren't either.
Wow. Well, not at the content, but the delivery. Man, I was there in Jerusalem at the Waldorf Astoria when Mossab Youssef, the former Hamas member and son of Hamas founder, spoke at the JNS summit, the International Policy Summit. And it just, first of all, the way he was received, like a rock star, hundreds of people giving him a standing ovation before he even opened his mouth. And then the things he said, you know, he really unleashed on Trump. For example, one of the most striking arguments he made was he addressed Trump directly. He said, "You went to war on a schedule in the Middle East. That's not how you conduct war here. You don't go to war on schedule. You go to war until you win." He accused Trump of squandering the success that Israel achieved a year earlier in Rising Lion and the earlier operation. And he was just deeply disappointed with this president. By the way, Youssef said that from the get-go, he didn't want Trump involved in this. And the host, the panel moderator, tried to get some sort of positive or optimistic message from him. But he said, "I'm not optimistic. I don't have an optimistic message. But for one thing, if anyone thinks that Israel's existence depends on their goodwill, on their protection, then they need to look at Jewish people's 5,000-year-old history of
Powerful.
survival and recalibrate. And that's what he said. And again, the audience erupted with expressions of affection and appreciation for this remarkable man. By the way, he was near the border with Iran, I don't know if they were Kurdish, but militias that are hostile to Iran, he revealed during this conference. And he was talking to the people on the ground to see who's prepared to lift this challenge and actually go and fight the Iranian regime on the ground. He said that he wasn't very impressed with what he saw with the level of mobilization that the opposition forces have in Iran.
And just in case you're unaware of whom Kran and I are speaking about, this guy was actually the child of one of the most senior members of Hamas in Gaza until he had a wake-up moment. Kanan, I want to move on to the story that Norway apparently planning to ban trade with Israelis in Judea and Samaria. What's that about?
Well, we know that Norway has been hostile to Israel and arguably the Jewish community because they let a anti-Israel organization head the Holocaust commemoration ceremony last year. But right now it's trickling down to policy. We have the government saying that they will approve a bill that would ban importing goods from the occupied territories, as they call it, doing business with them, and owning real estate, by the way, owning real estate in those territories. And, on the ground, it has very marginal effects because trade with Norway is very small anyway, and especially trade between Judea and Samaria and Norway is minuscule. But what it does do is that it opens, and that's the danger, sources in the Jewish community in Norway say, it opens the path to boycotting all Israeli banks, all Israeli infrastructure companies. Why?
Oh, I see.
Because they have branches, they have presence, they have assets in those disputed territories. So what is being billed as one of those bans that we also saw in Slovenia and Ireland and Spain could be broadened to a blanket boycott. And that's already important because, unlike Spain, Norway has the largest wealth fund in the world. And it hasn't divested from Israel yet. And we're talking about billions of euros, of krona, I should say, really, that are in the Israeli economy.
So this is serious.
As it pulls out, we could really feel it here. Yeah.
I'm looking at the time. It's 7 minutes to maybe in the last 2 minutes that we have together this afternoon, you can address a non-Israeli issue, rather the United States. Brad Lander of the Democratic Socialists beating Dan Goldman, a two-time incumbent in New York City. How concerned are Israelis about the news coming out of New York and the ascendancy of Mamdani and his ideology?
Look, basically here in Israel, the Democrat Party has been written off as hostile. There are very few allies, and the ones we do have, Fetterman, for example, are pariahs in their camp, in their party, for their support of Israel. So even if a more favorable Democrat, and New York is of course a blue state, New York City is a blue city, if a more favorable candidate actually is elected, they're still bound to the anti-Israel line of the Democrat Party. What it does do, these anti-Israel activists, campaigners that get elected, they keep the issue alive in the media and they mobilize after it with comparisons of police brutality to the IDF and linking how what the IDF is doing to the Palestinians is connected to institutionalized racism in the U.S. So just stoking that anti-Semitic fire. And that is more of an issue for American Jews than it is for Israelis, because what that does fans the flame of anti-Semitism and they end up paying the price. So really, Israel is not really concerned. This is my interpretation. Yeah, Israeli politicians, the Israeli political establishment is not really concerned because we've already written off that party. But what it does mean, it means to the Jews of New York, and increasingly, you know, here in Israel, we're seeing whole apartment blocks, whole apartment projects, whole buildings being bought by communities in a concentrated purchase effort. We saw this with the Syrian community buying a big building project in Jerusalem just a few months ago. We're seeing the same thing in the UK, where immigration, Aliyah, jumped from 500 last year, sorry, in 2024, to almost 900 last year. So these politics are influencing locals, not us Israelis.
Kanaan, as always, thank you so much. We're going to leave it there, and I hope we don't wait too long to chat to you again.